Welcome to the Atom Ventures podcast. My name is Byron Patel. I'm the managing director of Atom Ventures. And today I'm here with Daniel Williams from Next Level Consultancy. Say hello, Danny.
How are you doing? You all right?
Doing well, doing well. Good. So you're a podcast virgin, right? So this is the...
Absolutely.
Okay. So today what we're going to do is we're going to talk about three main areas. The growth mindset for 2021, networking, collaboration, partnerships, and building your brand. I seem to be doing a lot about brand recently, but that's all good. But before we get into all of that, can you tell people a little bit about yourself, your background? How did you come to start Next Level Consultancy?
Yeah, sure. So my background's mainly been in sales, and it's been in sales in various roles, mainly in equipment rental and equipment hire across the UK. I'm based in Stockport, and my background, as I say, for at least 10 years was sales, but then it sort of got into the marketing mix towards the end of it before I left my last employer. So I've started Next Level Consultancy back in October 2017, so just over 3 years now. And that was very much founded on the back of wanting to work with businesses who struggle, I guess, to create and implement an effective sales and marketing strategy. And it was one of those things that, for me, I knew I could help people with, and I just needed to find that right platform and the right way to actually go about doing that. But just rewinding back before I actually started Next Level Consultancy, essentially the last business that I worked for, I worked my way through, started as a business development coordinator in the head office, then got my first field sales manager role, which I looked after the North region, then was promoted to a national account manager role and kind of progressed through there. And the last role I had there was a product manager role, which then saw me kind of move from the comforts of working with the sales director to then being under the marketing director and working with the marketing team. That business went into administration. Like most people that become self-employed, the company went into administration. I thought, right, what can I do? And I actually partnered up with someone. I actually started and joined someone who actually worked at that business to start my own business and founded that in January 2017. And after about 9 months of working basically co-founding a digital marketing agency, We actually got a client on board that I really wanted to work with in terms of actually creating the strategy and implementing it with them, because I felt the challenge with a lot of marketing agencies and a lot of creative agencies is that they don't necessarily have the commercial background that the client has and vice versa. So there was a real disconnect between a marketing agency and the client and that sort of common ground in between. So the client actually asked me to step in and support them as their part-time sales and marketing director. And I realized when I started doing that, that was my real passion, was to actually get a bit more hands-on and become incumbent within the client. So that's what I did. I decided to make the decision to create Next Level Consultancy. And for me, you know, when people talk about, you know, how did you come up with your brand? What was the name? What was the purpose behind it? For me, I wanted to work with sort of small businesses and SMEs. And I was quite clear that it didn't really matter what level they were at. The idea was that we take them to the next level. And it was as simple as that, really. And it kind of went from there. So yeah, that's kind of how I started Next Level Consultancy, really. And it just went from there. I carried on with that client. That client led to another client through a referral, and you know, the rest is history in a sense.
That's interesting. There's a couple of things I like to explore there. Before I do, though, I know you've recently gone through a branding, your own branding, rebranding through Next Level Consultancy, right? So you were going through a new website launch, new branding, new kind of look and feel. So talk us through that process. Like, why did you decide you needed to do it? And how did you go about doing it?
Well, so the branding, so I guess this is interesting. It's an interesting topic, because the branding for Next Level Consultancy has never changed. But what I did introduce is I introduced sub brands. So as the business has developed, I very much started back then in October 2017 as just sales and marketing consultancy. And obviously over the course of those years, I've kind of looked at ways of how I can kind of bolster that proposition, and obviously how the business has evolved from that point. And obviously, as you know, because I know you've been on one of my Next Level Networking events, Next Level Networking was introduced, and I know we'll talk about that in a little bit later. But what I wanted to do is kind of create their own identity for that proposition. So there was different levels of networking that I felt, rather than just kind of saying, were next level consultancy and we do networking, they had their own kind of purpose. So when I relaunched the website sort of halfway through this year, a big part and purpose of that as well was to take the next step in becoming an e-commerce website. So obviously I was using Eventbrite to host my events virtually and so on, and process card payments. But then I actually took that step and made the investment to then create an e-commerce platform and just bring it all in. So, you know, it ticks those boxes. It generates that sort of brand identity. It drives traffic to your website. And ultimately it means that it saved me a lot of money as well on fees that I, you know, previously would have had to pay to Eventbrite.
So this is interesting because actually we're going through a very similar process at the moment. We had have Atom Ventures, which is like an umbrella. Yeah. Atom CTO, which is one thing. And then we're putting out a new thing called We Build MVPs as a new launch next year. And what we've been debating internally is how do you reconcile all that? So I guess a lot of companies are going through similar things, right? When they're,
sure,
especially during this period now where they've had to not, so I guess some will have had to pivot, but reinvent themselves. But how do they do that without losing what they built up already? So how do you kind of attach yourself? How did you do it? So obviously Next Level Consultancy had a brand and an image. Next Level Networking had it live for its own. How did you connect them in a way that everyone understood? Oh, yes. Except for the name, of course.
It's a great question. And do you know what? It's actually, it is a challenge. And I think it's something that a lot of businesses don't do very well in terms of rebrands or in terms of sub brands and developing that proposition. For me, you know, I hope that it went well. I hope people would agree and sort of testify to that. But for me, it was very much a case of being really clear on, I guess, the identity and the purpose of it. So for me, it was telling the story. It was showing the evolution of the business and showing the evolution of the proposition to say, look, prior to COVID, we had Next Level Networking events, and that was that, you know, kind of logo and identity and format of how that worked. We've now developed further events, and therefore we want to really differentiate from those events, because those events will be back. You know, I will be relaunching the social events that I was doing in Manchester, London, Edinburgh, and Birmingham next year when obviously that we get to that point. But I wanted to therefore then create that identity. So for me, obviously having a marketing agency as well, I did have that advantage that we could do that in-house. They kind of, you know, create and develop those sub brands. But for me, it was about making sure that you're telling the story about why you're either rebranding or creating a new brand, and differentiating between those two things, or keeping that within the Next Level kind of family.
So that's interesting. So I guess the key really is, how do you differentiate and keep it together? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. It's, I mean, look, I'm not a graphic designer by no means, but certainly in terms of the brand palette, the fonts that you're using, so on. So I was really clear that when I was creating the sub brands, it had to be clear to me and everyone else, more importantly, that was still belonging to Next Level Consultancy. So for example, the actual logo itself, obviously the Next Level aspect of it, is in the same font. So again, there's little similarities there that people will pick up on, that hopefully the Next Level Consultancy brand is strong enough that they will then recognize that that's part of that. But then, as you say, it's then creating that differentiation as well without, you know, making it look like it's someone completely different. And that's where different colors come in, you know, and that's for me, little sort of insight into it, because I've not really told anyone, but the obvious choice for me around branding and familiarity was, if I was going to create Next Level Networking virtual events, what do people recognize and what do people associate with virtual right now? And that was Zoom. So actually the blue in the background of my virtual events is the exact same blue as Zoom. So I use that kind of color association to, I guess, differentiate the fact that was virtual versus the other ones were actual events.
Let's wind back to the beginning, right? If I'm a small business coming to you, or a startup, and I'm looking to start a brand, many of the companies that we work with, they come with ideas, but they don't have a brand behind it. You know, what do you do? How do you take them through the process? What is your process?
I mean, to be honest with you, I wouldn't really say I am a brand specialist. You do get businesses out there that focus on kind of the mission, the values, and that. I personally don't generally go down that route. However, for me, you know, what the advice I would give to businesses that are starting out and do want to have some support with creating a brand, and we can do that through the agency in terms of the physical aspects, is very much about understanding who you are as a business. What is it? What does the business mean to you as well as to your prospect clients and customers? And actually understanding that aspect will therefore help shape that, because I've seen many businesses that don't understand that from the off, and they just create something that, you know, they've bought for £5 on, you know, Fiverr or whatever else is, you know, and got someone to do that. And there's no meaning to it and there's no purpose to it. So there needs to be some real thought process in, you know, what does the brand mean to you? Because as your business, you know, it should mean something to you. It shouldn't just be something random. So it's creating the brand story, you know, and you know, whilst sort of it was, it means to be sound flippant there, but in terms of the mission, the vision, and the goals for your business, they should be kind of reflected in that. So to try and answer that a little bit more, accurately, when I was creating my brand, and obviously I didn't physically create it because I'm not a graphic designer, I got a graphic designer to do it, but one of the things that I was looking at is that, right, what color schemes do I feel best represent me as a consultant, as well as kind of the industry and things like that. So there was that thought process that went into it. And for me, red and black, the key association with that was out of the red into the black from a kind of sales and profitability perspective. So that thought process wasn't just, oh, red and black look really good together, let's go for it. There's a bit more depth and meaning behind that. Obviously the next level, that's self-explanatory. And many people don't realize it, but when you look at next of the next level consultancy, there's actually a dead space there, which creates an arrow forwards. So there's just things like that. It's about integrate. And again, I can't stress enough, budgets are always a challenge when you're starting a business. And I guess that's probably number one consideration. But definitely take your time to think about what your brand means to you. Which you can do yourself. You don't have to pay through the nose to get a branding consultant or whatever else to do that. Those people generally are working with sort of corporate organizations that are going through brand evolution. When you're starting your first brand, it needs to be personal. It needs to be, you know, more meaningful to you is what I would say as a business owner.
So obviously you're very experienced in sales and marketing. So how do you tie in all those three together? Sales, marketing, branding. When you're looking at sales within a business, how do you drive sales with the marketing and brand behind you?
I think there's a couple of things there. I think for me, you know, your brand and your brand identity and branding is actually just, I wouldn't even put that as a separate thing. It's part of marketing. It's the marketing mix is quite diverse, as you know. And for me, your brand identity and kind of your branding is one aspect of marketing. For me, the areas are really mainly focusing on sales and marketing, which obviously the slogan for the next level consultancy is sales plus marketing equals growth. And for me, it is kind of that simple. Because with those two elements that have lots of different areas within them, you know, they are the key focus for any business. You know, you need to be able to effectively communicate what your business does and more importantly, how you add value to your prospects. And then essentially you need to then, to have a strategy in place to convert those prospects into revenue. And that's the sales piece. So I guess really from the sort of integration of them, which is something that I'm a big advocate of. And also that's why I do that. You know, you'll meet a lot of sales consultants and you'll meet a lot of marketing consultants because generally they're quite separate. And my background is more in sales, but with sort of co-founding a marketing agency, having that, experience at a corporate level within a marketing structure and role, I really wanted to focus on the integration of those because it doesn't really happen. And that's one of the big challenges in a lot of businesses is sales director might be going that way, the marketing director might be going that way, and actually they should be working together. And I think the more successful businesses, whether they are small businesses or corporates, is they do work together to you know, achieve a common goal.
Let's talk more about sales and sales and growth and growth for 2021. So yeah. Obviously this time has been very difficult for many, many businesses, though having said that, lots of businesses are doing pretty well during this. What's your advice to businesses now, right, that are looking to come out 2020 and into 2021, and you know, what should they be focusing on in your mind?
I think one of the things I often tell people is, I guess, the three P's, which is be positive, because there's a lot of negativity out there. And, you know, I get it, you know, certainly from a business owner or a leader within that organization, a director of the company or head of department or whatever, it's tough. And if you're in that place where, you know, your revenue's down, you could be losing money. You're having to think about, you know, redundancies and so on. That positive mindset of, okay, this is where we're at now. How can we progress? What do we need to do to move forward? It's essential, because if you get your head down in the sand, and again, that one of the frustrations really, if I'm being honest for myself, is there are a lot of CEOs, MDs, business owners that don't stick their hand up for help straight away. That they hope that they can resolve it. They hope that they have to do, you know, they think they have to deal with it on their own, and they just crack on. And then unfortunately it just declines. And before you know it, they're in a spiral that they can't get out of. So for me, it's about being positive. But that leads me on to the next one, which is about being proactive. And I mean that from the top in terms of, as I've just described, you know, don't be afraid to stick your hand up and say, actually, I need some help here, because we can't do it ourselves. We absolutely can't do it ourselves. And from a sales perspective, if you have a sales team within your business, you know, be proactive in terms of as many leads as you've got. And there will be leads, whether that's through your LinkedIn pages, your social media, your website, email campaigns that you're running, whatever that may be, you know, leads should be coming through the marketing team to support the sales function. That's that big part of the integration. So, but be proactive. You know, we're in a year now where, because we are more available in some of the respects, and we're all working remotely, whether that's from home, whether that's from the office, whether that's from Croatia, wherever that may be, you know, we're at a point now where it's noisy. You know, social media is noisy. Don't think for one second that just because you've done a nice post and it's got 20 likes and 2,000 impressions, that people are going to start inquiring with you. You know, you need to proactively look on that LinkedIn post, for example, look at who's liked it, understand what they do, view their profile, and think, actually, could we support this person? Could we support that business? Right, let's give them a message. You know, because that for me is that proactivity. So that's whether that's from a sales perspective or whether that's from the business owner. And then the last point, which links into that, is be persistent. Because actually people are busy, and more often than not, whether it's through networking, if you're at a networking event, you meet someone, you know, how many times have you been to a networking event and people have actually followed up afterwards?
Yeah.
It's rare. And this is the challenge that, you know, if someone makes an inquiry, that's a hot lead. That's someone that has a problem, has identified initially that you may have that solution as a business, and has taken their time to inquire. For me, in terms of sales, I always say you need an answer. That's got to be a yes or a no. No answer means you carry on until you get the answer. It's that simple. And the amount of people that give up after one call, one message and one email, as an example, will be very, very high. I don't know the stats off the top of my head, but it'll be very high. So I think persistence at a time that, you know, without stalking them and without being too annoying, there needs to be a sales process there, where you agree, you know, time frames and you know, if you've emailed them here, right, we'll leave it 1 week to do that, we'll leave it 3 days to do that. But time kills deals, you know. So for me, it's about being positive, proactive, and being persistent.
I think the last P, I think, is quite an interesting one, because I see it all the time. As you mentioned, there's been an explosion of emails. I'm getting phone calls now, so cold calls. I'm getting LinkedIn is like insane. And what I'm finding is that people are—it's not actually stalking. People are getting rude.
Yeah, 100%.
People are getting very weird. So I mean, I think one person sent me an email every day for almost 2 weeks.
Yeah,
like, I can't get. And you're like, well, hang on. Yeah, I'm busy now. I'm just intrigued as to how far you're going to go with this.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, do you know what? I think that is interesting, because it's probably a little bit through desperation. It's through desperation because of the business and where they're at. And, you know, these sales professionals have got targets to hit. And I get that. And I absolutely do my best, because like yourself and many other people, I get so many messages on LinkedIn every single day. And probably in the past 2 months, I've probably had more cold emails through email campaigns that I've not opted into, by the way. So they do breach GDPR. Look, I'm not the GDPR police, but I am a marketing consultant. So I do always find it like quite comical when people just add me to their mailing list with not even an introduction. We're not even connected on LinkedIn. They've just scraped the data and added me on, and it's just really, really poor. But it is through desperation, and it's probably through a lack of training as well. I think whether that's sales training, whether that's LinkedIn training, I think it's a combination. But it is frustrating, and you're right, it is rude. I mean, I did a post on this recently, actually, like if, and I'll dig it out and send you the link, because it was like, would you approach someone and do a cold call at 4:39 a.m.? Because I get messages on LinkedIn at 4:39 a.m. and 5 a.m. You know, and it's very, very clearly, hey there, and things like that. It's all automation, LinkedIn automation, which I absolutely am opposed to and hate for a number of reasons. But yeah, it's just about planning your time, having an effective sales strategy in place, and then following it. You know, it's as simple as that, but it's only simple if you know how to do that.
So this is a question I've asked others before, sales experts before that I've interviewed, and so is there a difference if you're selling a service versus a product in your sales process?
Yes, 100%. And this is the thing as well, you know, things like transparency of pricing, for example. So products, more often than not, you know, that they cost you X to make and you sell Y. And in between that, there will be other costs associated with the profitability of the product. But it's quite simple. With a lot of service-based products, and this is something as well, if you sell products, you have customers. If you sell services, you have clients. That's kind of a big bugbear of mine that I like to try and get out there. And ultimately, it's like for me, marketing products are often a lot easier to market services. That's my general feeling. Okay. But they need to be marketed in a very different way, because it's about, more often than not with products, it's about the experience of the product and the benefits of the product. The service is more often kind of long term, and it might also be associated with pain points within the business that the service is going to touch on, rather than sort of a straightforward, this is a product and this is what it does. But yeah, there's definitely differences in between how you market them and what they are, in my opinion. Yeah.
So what would you say are the, I mean, like from a practical perspective, what should people be thinking about on products versus services? So if I'm a startup and I've got a new product I want to launch out there, what should the methodology should I follow? Same for services.
That's a really tough question. And the only reason I say that is every product is really different. Like, so for example, I tell you what, the one thing I would say is, because every product is different and every industry is different. But on the back of that, I would say know your audience and actually know where they are. And in terms of how you market them, for example, with products, you might have much better success at selling products on platforms such as Facebook and Instagram, because they're more geared up to do that. Whereas selling them on LinkedIn and just driving a link to an e-commerce website would be quite different. Obviously, the functionality on Instagram means that you can now tag in products on images and so on, where they can buy through Instagram and so on. So I would say know your audience, know where they are in terms of which platform, and then work on that platform the most. It doesn't mean don't be on LinkedIn or don't be on Twitter and so on, because there are other goals that you can achieve, such as brand awareness and kind of customer engagement. But when it comes to actually selling your product, you know, think about the platform that your customers are going to be buying from, so you can have that kind of ease of customer journey, is what I would say to that.
So services, I guess it's same, but it's slightly different as well, because you're attracting the person rather, you're obviously following the person, but that person has different hats on in different social media platforms, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, for example, you know, for what we do, and we're looking to work with, you know, primarily the CEOs, MDs, business owners. For yourself, it might be IT directors. For myself, it might be sales and marketing directors. It's very much a case of you've got to think about where they hang out, as people are saying these days. But ultimately, where are they going to be spending their time? For me, LinkedIn and Twitter are generally more appropriate for those kind of demographics and for B2B businesses. So for me, my focal point is LinkedIn. You know, I get the vast majority of my inquiries, connections, messages, and prospect clients through LinkedIn.
Right. So let's talk a bit about networking. Obviously, you have next level networking. Times have changed massively.
Yeah.
You know, from when you and I started our businesses back in 2017, you know, we could join every single networking group out there, go to events like 3 days, well, 5 days a week, you'd be going to events, figuring out which ones are the right ones. And then
absolutely. Right.
But you can't do that now. So how 2021, what should new businesses or businesses in general be doing?
Do you know what? It's a really good point. But my answer to that is exactly the same thing. The beauty and the benefit now is, you know, we used to go to these events, which means we had to drive there, we had to get the train there. So it was time to travel, it's cost of the tickets, it's cost of parking. It's then going there, it's then going, oh, this one's awful, the people here aren't for me, or actually the food's rubbish, or whatever that may be. You know, that trial and error process that we had for social events or for actual network events in the daytime, which took time out of your diary, has now gone. And actually, it's now more easy for people to dip into different virtual networking events, because there are quite a few different virtual networking events. Because what I've found is that the barrier to entry is gone. You know, like for me, event organization and event organizers, there's a lot involved. You've got to look at promoting the event. You've got to look at selling the tickets. You've got to look at organizing the venues, organizing the speakers, organizing the caterers, and all of that that comes with it. And a lot of people didn't have time or the inclination to do that. Those people then that have done that and then gone online, so like myself, I've probably struggled a little bit more than I should do, in the sense of, because there are now so many free virtual events. So there's a lot more people that have just gone, I can do this. It's free. Sat home in my pajamas and I can do a host of free virtual networking event and get people on, just get numbers and get leads. And that's how a lot of people have seen that. And it's kind of watered down the virtual proposition, because it sort of devalues it in that sense and floods the market. Whereas for me, as you know, I put a lot of time and effort into making sure that the format, the running, the preparation, the people and quality of those people that are going to be attending want to be there and want to build meaningful relationships, rather than just rock up because they've got a bit of time and it's free. And that's, for me, that's the difference. So, but to go back to your question, it means now you've got more time to visit different types of virtual networking that's out there and decide what is right for you in the short term. The other thing I would add to that is a bit of a plea, really, is especially for business owners. But if you were networking and you're now not, because you don't like virtual networking, or you've got the whole, you know, Zoom fatigue, etc., that's all in your head. Because if you've got Zoom fatigue, it's because you're accepting too many Zoom meetings per day. So for me, I've made a sensible decision and limitation as to how many Zoom meetings I feel appropriate per day and per week based on my diary, so that I don't get to the point where I'm like, oh God, not another one. We have to get into the place now where, yes, there's a vaccine out there. And yes, we're all very much looking forward to returning to social events and practical events face to face. And this is not the same. Virtual networking isn't the same, and it won't replace those events. But we should embrace the benefits associated with virtual networking and find the right one for you. And maybe, as many people will probably do next year, have a hybrid approach where you do pick and choose. And that is the key thing, is picking and choosing the right events for you at the right times, etc., whether you're a morning person, an evening person, or an afternoon. But doing that with both face-to-face and virtual is what I would suggest.
I guess the one big benefit of virtual meetings is I get better white wine now.
Because it's your own. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So this is a bit of a loaded question, given that you own Next Level Networking, but
sure.
You know, you touched on it, paid versus free. Now,
yeah,
is there a benefit to paid? Because I've seen a lot of the networks, you know, like the traditional ones, the names, not the BNIs, but there are certain traditional ones that, you know, you used to pay to go to, and then you'd be really random. Unlike your events, which I don't know, full, you know, revelation, I've been to these events, and they are curated, they are very good, but there's lots who aren't, and they just put lots of bodies in there, but you don't know that because you paid the money, right? And so so the issue I had with that is that, okay, having met you, known you, I'll definitely pay for your events because I know the quality, but then you don't want to go forking out lots of tenders here and there. So, you know, how do you know which ones to attend, and should do you think on the whole paid ones are better?
Yeah, that's a good question. So with a non-biased hat on, I do think there is a benefit to attending paid events. But to answer that question honestly, are paid events always better than free events? No, definitely not, because there are free events that I attend, such as the M Postcode Networking event, which is for Manchester-based businesses, but now they've opened that up UK-wide as well. And I also work heavily with Greater Manchester Chamber of Commerce, and their free events for their members and community have been fantastic as well. So I guess that, like with anything, it depends on the organisation that is running it. What I would say is, yes, it's a bit of a punt sometimes, because you don't want to be putting budget up front into lots of different networking events, only to then attend it and realize that it's not for you. So I get what you're saying. But my point to that would be this. One, there'll be different price points. So whether that's £5, £10, £15, £20, that's generally the range that I've seen per event. The thing I would say is, do due diligence, like look at the person running it, speak to or message. It's highly likely that within your connections in your circle, you'll know someone that's either been to one of their events or does attend them regularly. You know, for me, I publicize my next level members, and I also publicize those that have attended events in general but aren't members. They want to come ad hoc because that suits them, and that's fine. You know, I advocate, if anyone wants to join Next Level Networking, don't take my word for it. Speak to the people that come and that are getting the value out of it. That's the key thing. And that should be the same with anything, really. But yeah. And the other thing is, just to wrap that one up, is budget. You know, set yourself a budget. If you've got to set yourself a networking budget out of your marketing budget, which is where it would sit and be allocated per month for networking, because a lot of people get real value out of networking. And it's not just about lead generation as well. Especially in this current climate, it might just be about speaking to people. Because if you're working remotely, working from home, you know, and you're not seeing people as anywhere near as often as you used to, but you want that, you know, being in an environment in a room for an hour, for 90 minutes with like-minded people sharing their same sort of situation, their challenges, their positive updates can have such a massive impact on your own kind of personal mindset and mental health. So for me, it's got those benefits as well, that for the sake of, I don't know, let's say you did four events, different events in a month or in a week, and they were £10 each. For the sake of £40, on the back of that, you should have a good understanding of which one is for you. Then my advice is stick with it, because you will not just go to one and make it. Well, people do, but what I'm trying to say is, don't make that snap decision. You've got to give it a chance, because you've got to understand the format. You've got to understand how long things take to build those relationships. You've got to understand whether you can get on with those members, or whether there's going to be new people thrown into the mix, whether there's a different guest speaker the week after. So it's finding the right one for you, or that you think is for you, then sticking with it for at least 1 to 2 months is my advice. And again, that's all about budget.
You've actually touched on one of the next questions I was going to ask, and that's about effective networking, right? So yeah. Obviously, you know, in the traditional days, you'd be in a room of 100 people, but you could only ever really speak to 3 or 5 or 10 max.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So now it's a similar situation I find in online networking, right? Because you don't tend to get the ability to individually meet people.
Yeah.
So how can you really effectively network and try and build those partnerships and collaborations?
I love this question, because I'm really passionate about it. And I think the reason I'm passionate about it is, not enough people understand or realize or act on the fact that really networking is about having a gateway. It's not about doing business on that event. It's not about building a relationship in 60 minutes or then 5 minutes if you had a one-to-one with them. It's about connecting so that you can then progress. So in terms of effective networking for me, you know, for example, I alternate my next level networking events, so that one week it's as guest speaker, the next week obviously is a breakout room. And for me, the breakout rooms have been really, really popular, because on larger events, you know, where there's sort of 50 to 70 people, you'll often get in a room with 5 to 6 people, and you'll go in for 10 minutes and you'll have 2 minutes each, which really is just about doing their 2 minute pitch. Mm. Yeah. With mine, having a one-to-one, so to speak, where you've got 10 minutes with that person, so 5 minutes each, I find is a lot more meaningful and effective because you get to know that person better. And the key thing about that is, you touched on numbers before, and I always say this, my events generally will get anywhere from, I think the lowest I've probably had 8 up to sort of 20, 25, and I cap it at 25. I don't have more than 25 on mine. And the reason for that is that the demographic that I work with in terms of business owners and business leaders, you know, generally that is what they want. They don't want to be in a room full of 80 people. Because the reality is you're only going to speak to 5 to 6 of those people anyway. You know, so for me, it's about quality over quantity. I think, meeting that person, having that connection with them, whether it's a 2-minute or 5-minute kind of update, connecting with them then on LinkedIn. Yeah. Which is, again, is definitely a good practice, but then more importantly, following up with them. So sending them an email or sending them a message to get their email, then having a proper Zoom meeting, whether that's 60 minutes, 30 minutes, 90 minutes, whatever you feel appropriate, depending on whether they actually could be a prospect client. Or more importantly, if, you know, a lot of people use this as an example, accountants, if there's a partnership to be had there with accountants, then ultimately you have that meeting to see how you're then going to work on a kind of referral basis. Because I think a lot of people forget it's not just about the people in the room. You're building relationships with them. But guess what? Next week, that person you've just met may never be a prospect client of yours, but they've just introduced you to someone who actually is your target client, because it's about leveraging their network as well as yours. So I think a lot of people forget that it's referral marketing is what networking is all about. It's about building meaningful relationships for me with those people so that you can then leverage their network. And if you get to work with them in the process, great. Because ultimately what that means is not only have you built a relationship up there, but you've nurtured that to the point where they want to work with you and they find a way to work with you, which is amazing.
Yeah, I think that's the key, right? So it's about ensuring that when you speak to someone, it's not just about what can they do for you at this moment in time. It's about, you know,
how can you support each other? How can you add value? And I think a lot of people miss that. And again, without being disrespectful, the whole purpose and reason I started Next Level Networking and made it exclusively for business owners and business leaders, and was really clear and still am to this day about that demographic and what your job title kind of has to be, is nothing to do with being elitist or nothing to do with the fact that that's my target market. It's not. I work with everyone now. We offer workshops to sales managers and BDMs, you know. But what I found is that actually when I was going to these networking events that are free, they were free networking events through Chambers and so on, that there were a lot less business owners and a lot more BDMs, marketing professionals, sales professionals that were there, because ultimately networking is a huge part of their role as well. And I fully support that. But as a business owner, from a personal perspective, I was going there and I was kind of like, look, I'm just being sold to here. I'm not actually, when I start telling them about me and about what I do, because that it's not their business and because there's no opportunity for them, which I totally respect, they're not really interested. They don't really progress that. So you were going to network and I was thinking, this actually isn't that meaningful for me. It's good. It gets me out of the office. I'm speaking to people. I'm raising brand awareness. So it's ticking some boxes. But in terms of actually meeting people for meaningful relationships and people that are in the same boat, that speak the same language, that are going through the same challenges as a business owner, you know, I'd probably say 10% if that were in that room. So you're just burning through a lot of business cards and getting a lot of business cards from people that actually don't really care about what you do because there's no benefit for them. So I looked at what kind of was out there and I felt there was nothing that I thought was of value to that demographic that was exclusive to that demographic. And that's why I created it. And it has been an uphill struggle because typically we are very busy. You know, that demographic, we're running businesses, we're managing people, you know, we're firefighting, we're thinking strategically and having planning days out. All of these things mean that networking's not really that high on most people's agenda. And I'm trying to find a way. And I hope I'm getting there. And I felt I was getting there in February. You know, we had nearly 40 business owners and leaders in the room. For me, that was a good accomplishment because I'd started it in June. And by January, and I was only running once every other month as well, by the way. So I'd only run about 4 events by that point. And the Manchester one in January, in February, was probably the most successful. And then bang, March hit and COVID hit us, and that was that. They all ground to a halt. But yeah, it's one of those. For me, I just felt that there wasn't necessarily that demographic. So hopefully that shines through in what we're doing at Next Level Network.
Okay, so I have a final question for you because we've blasted through 40 minutes already. So the question I always ask everyone at the end of the podcast is, if you could go back in time 20 years and give advice to your younger self, what would that advice be?
I mean, I'd be 10 then, but all right, we'll go with that. We'll go with that. I actually did a post on this, so it is a little bit of preparation here. I did a post on this only last week, conveniently, which was about what advice would you give if you were to start your business again? So kind of similar vibe. And for me, it's to act. And I split that down. I mean, it's to act in everything. I'm kind of always about, you know, certainly from a sort of more sales background, always about being proactive. But for me, be authentic is the A in act. You know, I think if you're authentic in yourself, you're building your own personal brand, but you're the same kind of online and offline, that's huge in terms of building a business and building your personal brand. So that's definitely something that I would do. And do you know what? Some people won't like you, and that's fine, because, you know, there'll be all people. Everyone will have people that they either don't like, and whether that's through jealousy or whether that's because they just don't like you, whatever, that's fine. But you need to accept that and not be that kind of people pleaser. So be authentic and be true to yourself. The next thing I'd say in the C in act is collaborate. You absolutely cannot do it yourself. And I've always been a believer of that, but have I been as forthcoming and proactive with getting help? Probably not, because as business owners, we don't. We think we should do it all ourselves. We think we should know the answers because we're at the top of the tree now. And the reality is we don't, you know, we don't know all the answers, and working with a good accountant, working with a consultant, working with, HR, you know, outsource, whatever, to get the best out of you doing what you do best so that, you know, other people can support you. So collaborate in that respect, and collaborate in terms of, you know, associates, and networking, and just collaborate is generally what I would say. And the last thing is time. Just be patient. You know, I'm just over three years now, and I think we're all, especially the ones that I'm extremely ambitious, you know, I make no apologies about that. And I think it's served me well for the majority of what I do, but be patient, because actually it takes time to build a business. It takes time to build personal brands. It takes time to support clients in the right way, to get the right testimonials, to get the right reputation. It takes time. It takes time to develop your business when you are organically growing. You know, I've had no investments or anything like that, but no investors. I own the businesses myself 100%. They are separate, but they're both mine. And I'm proud of that, because I've funded it myself, you know, and now I'm in a place where I want to create jobs. I want to grow the businesses, and I'm doing that myself. That takes time. So just be patient is what I would say. So act.
So, well, I hope you enjoyed your first podcast.
Loved it. Yeah. Thank you for having me on. Really appreciate it.